Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I think it's going to be the greatest atmosphere at any boxing event I've ever witnessed. You know, certainly in my lifetime. And I'm so pleased for her as well.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Very good morning. Welcome along. It is a Friday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast. It is the 19th of June and it is 7:30 and loads to come on the show between now and around 10 o'clock or so this morning. As you see on screen, we will go through the morning back page headlines in just a few moments and discuss, of course, all the overnight action from the World Cup. At around 8:15 a.m. or so this morning, we'll have Stephen Smith, former Westmeath star, with us to discuss a huge weekend in the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship as those round three fixtures take place tomorrow and Sunday all around the country. Alan Quinlan talking rugby as usual on a Friday morning from around 8:45 a.m. The URC Grand Final between Leinster and the Bulls takes place at Croke Park tonight at 7:30. We'll of course look ahead to that game at 9:15 a.m. this morning as well. We have all your World Cup needs. Paul John Dykes will join us to discuss Scotland ahead of a huge game for them tonight, and of course some machinations at Celtic as well, with Martin O'Neill looking to confirm his backroom team ahead of next season, having been given a new 1-year extension at Parkhead. Loads to get into, and just to mention the results from overnight in case you have missed them from the World Cup. You had yesterday Ghana beating Panama 1-0, Uzbekistan losing to Colombia 3-1. That was overnight the night before. Czechia and South Africa playing out a 1-1 draw yesterday. Switzerland beating Bosnia and Herzegovina 4-1. Overnight, Canada co-hosts beating Qatar by 6-0. And then the fixtures today, I also forgot to mention Mexico's 1-0 win over South Korea. That secured their spot in the last 32. They'll play a game in Mexico City in the last 32. This evening in Group D at 8 p.m, it's USA versus Australia. At 11 p.m. in Group C, it's that clash between Scotland and Morocco. Brazil versus Haiti at 1:30 in the morning. Tomorrow morning, Irish time, Group C. And in Group D at 4 a.m, if you're brave enough to watch Turkey and Paraguay. And Nicole is here, as always. Good morning.
Shane.
How are you keeping?
Good. It was a day for the purists yesterday.
Day for the football purists.
Absolutely.
One of whom is Ross Flanagan. Good morning, Ross, to you.
Morning.
Two Ross football purists in the studio this morning, I think. Two of yourselves, of course, not including myself in that mix.
I will admit that I turned the Switzerland-Bosnia-Herzegovina game off around 68 minutes last night. So I was one of the people who were punished for my behaviour watching the World Cup. I should have just stayed on. Turned into a cracker.
You did. I watched most of that game and most of Czechia, South Africa. You find yourself kind of zoning in and out, don't you? A little bit in games.
I don't know. It depends. Like I left here around 40 minutes into South Africa and I was like, you know, oh, this will be all right. No, come on. By the time I came home, I was like, I'm not sticking on the last 10 minutes. It's no point.
No, it's not worth it. And then you miss a number of goals.
Yeah. Well, not that one, but.
Not that one.
Every time I watch Czechia at this World Cup, though, I am a little bit annoyed.
It hurts, doesn't it?
They're a terrible team.
Sorry, South Africa are woeful, by the way. Just the decision making in that game against Czechia, just taking shots from distance, not putting corners into the box. I know Czechia are a big team, but still, last minute they get a corner and they decide to play it short once more. It's like, what are you doing? And then after the match, I'm listening to the South African manager saying, oh, we played fantastic. I'm like, nothing could be further from the truth. I know we're going to do a thing. You can tee this up, Enda, because we're going to rank some of the World Cup teams. How do you want to tee this up? Because this is going to be a thread throughout the show, essentially.
So we're going to be doing what we are calling the OTB Best Board. And every time you hear this sound effect,
Great tune.
That was actually, did you know that was written specifically for the Karate Kid, by the way, back in the 80s?
I did not know that.
Nobody did until now. But this is the OTB Best Board. So essentially what we're going to be doing is we're going to be, each team has played in this World Cup once already.
At least once,
At least once. Some teams have played twice now after yesterday's action. And we're going to be making judgment calls based on their performances and how we think they are as a nation team. Not as a nation. We're not ranking these nations. We're ranking their football teams. And all judgments are final. We are making absolute broad decisions based on seeing these teams potentially for the first time in our lives. And I'm not sure if we're going to be allowed to change these as the tournament goes on. We might change the rules as we go on. But essentially what we're going to be doing is we're putting them into categories. So if this is the best board, so obviously the best is the best, so that's the top tier. We've got good. We've got meh.
Okay.
And around the middle, you could also say, you know, middling.
Yes.
Then we've got poor. And then the bottom is S. So I don't think I need to tell you what that means.
Fair enough.
Subpar.
Superb.
So let's say subpar.
Subpar, not superb.
Yeah. So do you want to go through the first ones now, or do you want to...
Let's do it. Let's leave do a few of them. Let's do a few
right,
of them.
Right, so we obviously there's a lot of teams in this World Cup. There's 48 in total. So we'll do four groups of four.
Okay.
Right, to begin with. So Mexico. Where are we putting Mexico on this tier list?
So we're putting them in... So what are the top two stand for again?
We've got best, we've got good, we've got medium, we've got poor, and we've got subpar.
I'm putting Mexico in good.
Yeah,
I'm putting Mexico in good. Yeah, they've done what they needed to do. They're through the last 32. They'll have a Mexico City game there. South Korea, not an easy team to beat. I didn't see this game over and I just saw the highlights, but it was a horrendous mistake from the South Korean keeper for the winner. But I still think when you are a co-host, the pressure is rightly on you, and Mexico have handled the pressure so far. Yeah, I'd put them as good. I'd see them as getting to a last 16.
Okay.
I don't know if they'll get much further than that, but I think last 16 warrants a good...
Having the home advantage.
I don't think they're bad. I don't think they're bad.
They're definitely not bad.
Yeah. Having the home advantage would make a huge difference, especially, you know, it being the Azteca or Guadalajara last night.
Yeah.
Monterrey.
Will we go South Korea? Beaten by Mexico last night. Haven't been great. I'm just going to make a swift judgment call on South Korea. I'm going to put them into the meh. And I think they're lucky to get into the middling, to be honest.
I agree with you.
They're pretty poor.
Yeah, and yet they'll probably still get out of that group.
Well, they'll probably come second.
Yeah, probably will.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep firing because...
What about Czechia?
To only draw with that South Africa team last night, what is the second from bottom tier?
Poor.
Well, that's where I'd be putting Czechia.
Czechia are a poor team.
They're a poor team.
I'm putting them there. And then South Africa.
Oh,
subpar.
Absolutely. Bottom of the rung.
So that's actually, there's four teams in four categories right now, four tiers.
Okay.
Right. We'll move on to Group B.
Yeah.
Switzerland, Canada, Qatar, and Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Do you want to make a decision each? You go for Switzerland.
I'd put them in the second category.
Agreed.
Probably top
as in group. Good?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Switzerland good?
Excellent yesterday.
4-1 last night.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I'd put them on the same level as Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah.
Canada? I think we're doing this. I think we're giving a lot of credit to some of these teams, but we'll continue. Canada?
Look, they had a 6-0 win overnight.
Jesse Marsh and his celebrations.
They
what
almost
do you think
need
that?
To go meh because of Jesse Marsh's celebrations.
Did you not like them?
The full-time ones, I don't really mind, even though they did go massively overboard. They've just won 6-0. It's the first ever win in a World Cup match. But the... Doing the DJ stuff after being awarded a penalty that ultimately was reversed by VAR. It was Alan Pardew and then some. Ridiculous. Jesse Marsh just is a wind-up merchant. You'd love him if you were a Canadian fan.
So we're putting them in the meh?
I'd put them in the meh.
Oh, yeah, so you don't mind the celebrations.
They've been a good host.
Like the DJ, whatever he was doing for that penalty, I'm not on board with that. But I don't mind the celebrations at the end of the game. I know Alan Colley wasn't a big fan of that. But
Much not a big fan.
At the same time... You've just beaten Qatar 6-0 at the World Cup on home soil. It's your first win as a nation. I know he's American, he's not Canadian, but one of your players has also broken his leg in that game. Qatar have had two red cards. You know, tempers flaring at the end of the game. I'd be giving it socks after that.
Yeah. Would you be making an argument for Canada or for Canada above meh?
No.
They've got 4 points from two games. No. They haven't done much wrong, but...
They're grand.
They're grand. I'll put them in meh.
Qatar, just gonna go ahead and get them in the subpar.
Yeah, just get that done. Yeah.
And Bosnia-Herzegovina, I thought they were quite unlucky in both their games. Decent enough side.
Decent enough. But if you're still relying on Edin Dzeko an hour...
That's very true.
I'd be putting them second from bottom.
Per?
Yeah.
Now we've got Scotland, Morocco, Brazil and Haiti. Good. Ooh. That's a good group. By the way,
is this based on so far? Because Scotland, you'd have to say, were meh against Haiti. We got the job done, absolutely. Got 3 points. I think maybe after tonight, we could be putting Scotland into good. I think they can get a result against Morocco. A Morocco team that should go far in this tournament. Scotland could eke out a draw tonight possibly, but yeah, for now I would say meh.
Scotland and meh?
It was a meh performance.
You think they're worse than Switzerland and Mexico?
So far in the tournament, yeah.
Oh, I think I think we're underselling Scotland here.
Oh, I don't. No, I'm sorry. By the end of the tournament, I think Scotland.
Is this not based on the game so far? No, this
played?
Is based on how you think they are as a team.
Okay, I'm still saying meh.
Okay.
Yeah, for me personally, but by all means, you have the final say.
Shall we go Morocco? I think Morocco are a good side.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they'll top the group in the end. I think either one of Brazil or Morocco might end up third.
Potential semi-finalists, at least, I think Morocco based on.
Yeah.
So by that metric, are you putting them in the top tier?
No.
So it's not based on what you think can happen.
It's the best team, Shane. It's called the best board.
So there's only one team can go in the top tier, is that what you're saying?
Or two teams.
Or two. Yeah. Okay, second for Morocco then.
Brazil.
Hmm.
Now, this is a tough one now. Are we putting Brazil good because they're a good side, or are we putting them in meh because they're meh relative to what we expect from a Brazil team?
Yeah.
These are the decisions.
We judge them more harshly. I'd still put them in the second tier.
Yeah,
they're a good team. If we put them third, it's just ridiculous because they go on to win the World Cup.
Yeah, we're sort of making a judgment call on Haiti as well here, because it's similar enough to the Brazil. Whereas, like, I think Haiti are relatively better than we would have expected from a Haiti side. So I'm going to put them in purr. I don't actually think they're one of the worst teams in the tournament.
Do it. Yeah.
Be honest.
Yeah.
Right, last one
for now.
USA,
really good host so far. Good win in the opening game,
better than we expected.
Yeah, and Australia's a tough match for them tonight. I would put them in. I mean, based on so far, you have to put them in the second tier as well. Like, they're on the par with Mexico and Switzerland. I know we're filling up that second tier quite
big
easily,
call.
But big shout.
I think the potential quarterfinals easily.
Yeah. Yeah,
put them in the good.
That would put them in the good.
Australia, they're okay.
They're very good.
They're not bad.
I mean, a win against Turkey.
Yeah.
I'm not putting them in the good.
Okay, fair enough. You put them in meh.
I'm just going to make a ruling on that.
So this is based on what they're going to do in the tournament, because ultimately they couldn't have done much more in their one game so far.
Yeah. The dark horse is Turkey.
Yeah, they have to be. Considered poor
or subpar, because they're a bad side.
Well, they're a good side who were shocking in their first game.
Fair.
I think, yeah.
And then Paraguay.
Put them in the bottom there with our friends from South Africa and Qatar.
All right.
Yeah. So far, so good.
That's a decent start. So we've got Mexico, Switzerland, Morocco, Brazil, USA as good sides. Meh is South Korea, Canada, Scotland, and Australia. I think that's harsh in Australia, to be honest. Or not Australia. I think that's harsh in Scotland. Czechia, Bosnia, Haiti, and Turkey as poor, and then South Africa, Qatar, and Paraguay.
I'm happy enough with that. I'm happy enough.
Yeah.
Couldn't either revisit.
Yeah.
It's a good start.
Yeah, it's a good start.
We'll continue that thread.
Can I just mention a couple of the back page headlines in the newspapers? Bulls blueprint. Haven't had my coffee this morning yet. Bulls blueprint. South Africans hatch plan to down Leinster. This is the back page of the Irish Daily Mail. Bulls head coach Ewan Ackerman has called on his side to heed the lessons of last season's URC final defeat against Leinster, when a slow start sunk the South African heavyweights at Croke Park. Leinster flying out of the blocks at Croke Park last year and were 19-0 up at the break, with some early tries. Parch living the American dream as US look to build on their opening win. Ward wants Park to host World Cup playoff. Carla Ward wants Ireland to return to Páirc Cúive for their World Cup playoff this winter after her side landed the most difficult route possible to Brazil in yesterday's draw in Neon. Ward's side, currently at a record high of 21 in the FIFA rankings, will be expected to comfortably deal with Kazakhstan, ranked 100th in the world in the playoff semi-final. First leg, that 20-hour round trip to the edge of Europe. But then, of course, they'll face the winners of the Belgium-Poland semi-final, the two highest-ranked nations that Ireland could have drawn in a playoff final. How do we feel about that draw, lads? It's a good semi-final, notwithstanding the travel distance involved, but in terms of a final, it couldn't have been much more difficult.
Yeah, well, I thought they played well against both Belgium and Poland last November and going into middle of April.
Mm.
They were sort of not favourites to go into that Belgium game, the Belgium tie last year, and they sort of shocked everybody and pulled off a great result, which has gotten them the position they are in now. And then the two Poland games came off the back of tight losses to France and the Netherlands.
Yeah.
So to have, to get the result in Gdansk was amazing, and they played very well in that game. And then to top it off at home with a decent 1-0 win was a 1-0 was good. And I just think it all depends on the away leg is first for Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
And coming back to Tala or the probably the Aviva, depends on how fatigued they are travel before we get to that point of Belgium or Poland.
It's a long trip, isn't it?
I heard Celtic last August.
Travel time is something else. But look, they should comfortably, famous last words, comfortably get through the Kazakhstan two legs particularly.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad draw.
No, it's not
overall.
Bad. It could have been worse.
This group stage would give you confidence that Ireland can go and beat pretty much anybody at this stage. They were, you know, at times they were better than France in both fixtures. They beat Netherlands at home. They were within minutes of doing the same away from home as well. So, I mean, basing it off their performances, if they can continue the form on, I don't know if there's too much to fear.
Mm.
But again, Ireland at playoffs is a... It's a fearful thing in general. So
fill you full of dread. Also mentioned Rory Liz, old ghosts to rest. Rory McIlroy was happy to shoot under par in the first round of the US Open at Shinnecock Hills yesterday, considering his last experience at the Long Island venue. His 69, which included a first eagle at the event in 9 years, was 11 strokes better than his opening effort in 2018. And he spoke about the conditions, and he's seeking to win his first US Open title since making that major breakthrough in 2011. And very, very difficult conditions. I don't know if you saw any of this, lads, but the Keith Mitchell story was incredible. Keith Mitchell, by the way, just sounds like an EastEnders character. He's not. He's actually a professional golfer. But he made history in the US Open with a wild opening round. So he started with a double bogey in the par 4 10th. Essentially, on his opening nine, he goes six over and hits, 40? On his opening nine, and then in the back holes he hits 29. So a 40 followed by a 29. Ridiculous. A 41 and a 29. So talk about a tale of two different nine holes. It was quite an incredible showing from Keith Mitchell in the end to claw that one back. But ultimately the leaderboard sees Wyndham Clark at the top, six under. That's four shots clear of a number of players in tie for second. Americans, Sam Stevens, amateur Ryder Cowan, Max McGreevy, England's Matt Fitzpatrick, Dustin Johnson, Gary Woodland and John Rahm all on 2 under. Rory McIlroy in a tie for ninth position on 1 under par. Shane Lowry, unfortunately for him, just a touch further back. He's in a tie for 92nd after being 4 over when his play stopped. And Padraig Harrington, 7 over for a round of 77. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was really, really windy at Shinnecock Hills yesterday. The play was suspended for fog earlier on as well in the day. The weather's just been really disastrous over the last week or so. And has made the prep for the tournament quite difficult. I would say that Wyndham Clark getting to 6 under is a really strong feat in that, like, up until the very last few pairings, like, it looked like the leaderboard was going to look similar to like a 2 under, 3 under being the top. So to get to 6 under in those conditions were quite good. Be interesting to see what happens now when the weather improves, and also what happens with the course as they're trying to sort of let the course build into itself across the week and get more difficult, but they're also doing it in waves. So some players are saying, you know, it's not particularly fair on those teeing off early if you're going to be watering the course in the middle of those waves, because then it slows it down, obviously. So Rory played decent yesterday. For anybody who didn't get to watch it, he went bogey in the last two holes though, and that's why his scorecard looks the way it was. He was actually the group leader for quite a long period of time throughout the day yesterday, and was 2 under up until the last two holes. So definitely not a bad showing for any Rory McIlroy fans that are looking to tune into it across the weekend.
Yeah, he's in a nice position to mount a challenge in this tournament for sure. Back page of the Irish Daily Star this morning, one of our sporting greats, King Aidan O'Brien, notches 100th Royal Ascot success. JP McManus led the tributes as record-breaking trainer Aidan O'Brien hit an historic century of winners at Royal Ascot yesterday. The 56-year-old Baldoyle-based handler hit the landmark when Scandinavia gave him a 10th success in a featured Ascot Gold Cup for the ages. The Ryan Murr-ridden 4-year-old battled bravely to defeat the reigning champion Trawlerman in a thrilling contest. yesterday. Hills are alive for McIlroy. Rory McIlroy kept keeping his dreams of a second US double open alive with that 69 yesterday. Martinez looks for answers. Roberto Martinez has held showdown talks with his Portugal squad in a bid to revive their World Cup dream. Martinez and his flops were left stunned after being held to a draw by Democratic Republic of Congo in Houston. Where do you lads sit on the Cristiano Ronaldo situation? Like,
it's just when
he's dragging the team down a little bit, but then he could go and score two or three goals in the next game.
There was,
but maybe
was
that doesn't excuse it.
Near the end of the game, where he took it off Fernandez.
Oh, it was like, coming straight
to him.
You
can't do that.
That was one Thierry Henry highlighted in his rant. Yeah, like you say that Ronaldo could go grab two or three goals, but I don't know if there's evidence to suggest that he actually will do that. Mm. And this has been a dragged out storyline for the last 5 years. Like, oh, well, you have to put him in the team. It's like, at some stage, some manager just has to pull the plug. Erik ten Hag tried to do it, and, you know, he was probably too late to save the United ship at that point. It's just ridiculous at this point. Just take him out of the team. You're sacrificing a World Cup. This is something that only rolls around every 4 years. They've got an incredibly talented squad that are going to be less talented next time around.
Yep.
This you sometimes you only get one opportunity with a group of players, and they're throwing it away for a 39-year-old who hasn't been the best player in the world in a solid 5-6 years.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
As well as that, we don't see him play domestic football. Like, it's just not many people are tuning into the Saudi league.
Mm.
So what we see of him is international, and he hasn't been great at all. Portugal, we saw him obviously in Aviva, even in the other group games, the qualifying, he just wasn't.
Nice.
Wasn't at the races at all.
Martinez is just the wrong manager to have when you have an ego like Ronaldo in the dressing room, because Martinez is not going to tell him where to go. He's always going to pick him in the squad. He's always going to pick him in the team. He's rarely going to take him off. So yeah, look, they have Uzbekistan in their next Group K game on Tuesday evening, 6 p.m. Irish time, followed by Colombia next Sunday. So time to turn it around, in fairness. And look, if they're not going to finish third in that group, you'd imagine, but if they were to finish third in that group, I'm pretty sure that could be a last 32 tie with England. If England were to top their group, so they're going to have to buck up and get some more points on the board to avoid that potential banana skin in the last 32. We also have on the back page of the Irish Daily Star, McGrath leading light for Wexford. Former Waterford boss Derek McGrath is believed to be front runner for the Wexford job, with the model coming to terms with a dismal 2026 championship campaign. The net is being cast wide in search of a new manager to replace Keith Rossiter. Just a single championship victory this year, that opening round success over Kildare, followed by four successive defeats. So Derek McGrath certainly being mentioned as a possible option. The back of the page, the London Times as well. You've a bit of cricket there. Ben Stokes set to return for England for the third test against New Zealand next week. Rory battles the elements. Rory's hat flying off after one of his shots yesterday. And Tuchel aims to deliver for fans in pubs. Thomas Tuchel said he was thinking about how much fans watching the game in pubs across England will be enjoying his team of entertainers during the stunning second half in Dallas, that 4-2 win over Croatia the other night. So Thomas Tuchel thinking of all the people in the boozers across England.
I saw there was a pub in Bradford that did a happy hour. They started at 8 o'clock until the first goal, so they just had to do just an hour and 6 minutes.
Lovely. Yeah, nice amount of time.
Yeah,
you don't want too much. Thomas Tuchel giving out about the photographers as well.
Yeah, that was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Ridiculous.
When
on
you actually
Tuchel's
see
behalf, or
just or no, in terms of like the photographers standing in front of him.
Mm.
Like, that would drive anyone mad.
No, that's obviously where they've been told to go, so it's a FIFA issue more than anything else. But still, I kind of get his point. But he's saying the right things to get the England faithful on board. Like, that's what this is a German in charge of the English team at a World Cup. The true nationalistic English fans are going to take a bit of time to get behind him. But if he comes out with things like that, like, I want to look in my players' eyes, the white of their eyes as the anthem plays. He's definitely saying all the right things, Thomas Tuchel, and an impressive performance in the second half, particularly against Croatia.
Yeah, they were really good. We spoke about it yesterday on the show, that the way that he's managed to get Harry Kane playing in the side and still managing to get the best out of Jude Bellingham at the same time, and Elliot Anderson controlling the midfield, they do look really impressive. The back line is still questionable, you would say. John Stones, who hasn't played barely a minute for Man City throughout the year, playing ahead of Mark Gaze, probably a questionable enough decision, but he's gone for players that he trusts, and the first game is evidence that something is working. But you don't want to get too ahead of yourself with England at major tournaments, because they always have that thing where sometimes they look really impressive and then they meet an actual good side and they don't look that impressive anymore. So you would say Croatia are, well, we'll decide where they are on our best board later on the show, but I'd say Croatia are probably an okay side as opposed to a good side. I think their average age was 29 against England, so
Modric brought that up a few years, in fairness.
They're definitely a side that are probably at the tail end of their golden era, you would say.
Yeah, and tired legs. Like, Modric giving away the penalty was just pure such a slow reaction to that clearance, and he was always in danger of giving away a penalty. And just, but the two goals England conceded were poor themselves, and the poor times in that first half. So remains to be seen. Ghana isn't it up next for England? So we'll see how they get on. Keep the YouTube comments coming in, by the way, and get in touch with the show. WhatsApp us on 0879 180 180. Leave a comment on the YouTube or tweet us at Off the Ball, or email us as well, breakfast@offtheball.com. It's Off the Ball Breakfast with Viagra Connect. 50 milligram film coated tablets contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. Should we...
What are you up to this Father's Day, Shane?
This Father's Day, go on ahead.
You're a one-time father.
I'm a one-time father. I have one child, a little two-year-old girl. I'll be in here, Enda.
Okay.
On Father's Day this Sunday, I will be spending my Father's Day with John Duggan. So that's how I usually spend Father's Day, in fairness, because I'm in here every weekend.
It's like a father figure.
Like a father figure to me. There you go. So yeah, there you go. Even though John is not a father himself, he is a father figure.
I do think the best type of present for somebody for Father's Day is just to leave them alone. It's a good weekend to leave them alone as well.
Yeah.
You could leave them alone to watch the US Open. Leave them alone to watch the World Cup. There's GAA this weekend, round three fixtures in the football, quarterfinals in the hurling, although you wouldn't know it, URC final this evening, League of Ireland as well. So plenty to leave them alone and let them enjoy themselves. But if you want to treat them as well,
yes,
to an Off the Ball membership, there is a Father's Day offer that you can get. It is $49.99 a month, or $49.99 for 6 months is the offer. And you go to offtheball.com/dad to get that. So
I like it.
That's also a good Father's Day present, or something that you could just say to your children if you have them. This is what I want.
Yeah.
Want to listen to more End of Shane and Ross ranking the World Cup teams
on a Friday morning.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. Yeah. Happy pre-Father's Day to all who celebrate. So League of Ireland, Enda mentioned it there. Ross, another big night awaits us. So just having a look at the fixtures. What did we say earlier? Was St Pat's and Sligo Rovers is our live game?
Yeah. Stephen Doyle and Vinnie Perth will be there.
Brilliant.
Live commentary from 7 o'clock on News Talk, or the Gaelic app. And then there's also four other games. So Drogheda United are taking on Shelburne, United Park. Drogheda haven't been great recently. They're pushing themselves into a relegation battle. Whereas Shells last week did really well, held off Shamrock Rovers, let them have the ball, like, just didn't, until the goal, Graham Burke's goal, they just didn't give Burke space, didn't let him get the ball up to the two attackers up the top, and held off. And then Meepo Odebeko was lucky to be able to just make the run and just score on McGinty, who just wasn't good enough for the ball, came on the inside of his post and just wasn't able to put the arm down to get it. So they play very well. And then after Galway United are taking on Derry City, this is the first game at Pearce Stadium, home of Galway football.
I love having association football matches in Gaelic grounds, like it's up in Celtic Park as well. I think it's, now maybe the atmosphere, I don't know if the atmosphere is great up in Celtic Park at the minute, but for the football games, but I like it.
I think they can make a big occasion out of it. That's the big one with Celtic Park, especially, was that they're done now, but in Derry are, but they can make a huge occasion out of it. I don't know how much Galway are doing, but they were meant to be there last week, had to move it to Cork because Galway footballers are taking on Westmeath. But it'll be interesting to see what it looks like.
tonight?
I think it should be done more. It's the lack of joint up thinking within Irish sport in general. If you go abroad and see countries that thrive, even especially countries that play multiple sports, you will find facilities that are multi-sport facilities that the associations involved realize, hey, there's a lot of cost in building these and maintaining these and bringing people in. Maybe we should put our money together and potentially do something that builds something good in the community as well as just for our sport. And when I do think it's jarring as a football fan in Ireland when you go around each county, especially I always bring up the example of Donegal and Balbuffet, Finn and Harps, who play essentially in a cow shed at this stage. Mm-hmm. And then across the road, they've got a fantastic stadium for the Donegal GAA players. And you're just thinking, why do they not just pair these up and work it out so that both teams can benefit from the stadium and the pitch being used throughout the year, and also giving the town a focal point that this is the town stadium for the two county teams that play in both sports, and making it a community thing. Mm. You could also have athletics there if you needed to, you know, just make it a focal point.
Yeah.
As opposed to, well, that's where the GAA team plays, that's where the football team plays, and neither of the two shall meet.
Bring back Monaghan United and stick them in Clonus, is what I say, for a game. A lot of things have to happen for that to align, but
still have a very decent stadium. Still there.
Yeah, still
there's
there.
The amateur team is still playing, so hopefully in the future there's a National League third tier starting in September.
Never say never.
Never say never.
Never say never. Some other games to look forward to this weekend as well.
So, as the aforementioned Pats and Sligo Rovers, Pats will look to try and guess almost a jump on Shamrock Rovers. By Monday, they'll have two games in hand due to not being in Europe. So they play Sligo Rovers, jump on Shamrock Rovers, and then they play Sligo Rovers, who have really brought themselves into the relegation battle with Waterford. Now, the caveat is of that Sligo are always running on a shoestring budget, but they just haven't played amazing football over the last while.
Both those sides were good last year as well.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's something about, like, John Russell has done a great job at Sligo Rovers. When he took over, they managed to beat Motherwell home and away, hammer Motherwell home and away. And then it looked like every single year they just sort of almost look like they're going to get relegated, and then he manages to claw them in to 7th or 8th, which he may very well do this season. So it'd be interesting to see. We're past the halfway point now, so it's these matches that will take place while the other teams are playing in Europe. That would be the big turning point maybe for Sligo. And especially for Pats to try and maybe take the lead in July and hold it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shells will take on, or sorry, that's one. But Waterford will take on Rovers.
Yeah.
Again, that's Waterford haven't lost a game at home since the start of April, which doesn't bode well for the leaders.
Yeah, Rovers have been really strong though this year. Like, I don't know if Waterford's home advantage plays too much of a role in that. Maybe it does. Depends on the weather.
They went up to Rovers went up to Oriel Park in, I want to say, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, and, you know, played very well in the game, but it was real. Dundalk just battled hard and got the winner. And Rovers have slipped up now. They've lost five this year so far, including again last week. They just seem to, like, they only lost 8 last year.
Yeah.
And we're at the halfway point now. So I don't know if for the entirety of the season so far, everybody's like, don't sleep on Rovers. You know, they haven't got out of second gear yet, but I don't know if they can find their first gear. Especially with Europe coming up.
So Rovers on 40 points. 5 clear of Pats, but Pats of course have the game in hand. On Pats on 35 points, Bowes in 3rd on 34 points with 21 games played, the same as Shamrock Rovers. Dundalk in 4th on 32, And as you say, the bottom of the table is crazy as well. Waterford, certainly rock bottom on their 14 points after 20 games. Sligo Rovers, 19 points after 20 games. And above them, Drogheda United, 21 points after 20 games. Level with Galway United, but Galway United have the game in hand above them. It's tight. It's tight both sides. Shamrock Rovers, as you say, showing some frailties. Played 21, won 12, drawn 4, lost 5. It's not the dominant Shamrock Rovers team you might have seen in some of their title wins.
But even that, the league is so balanced now. Over the last, like, Rovers only won it with 66 points last year. Shells 63 the year before. It's just, there's no easy games anymore.
Mm.
Even against Waterford, teams have found that hard over the last while. So it's anybody's game. And then you have Bows are playing Dundalk at 8 o'clock tonight. And that's third against fourth. And Dundalk have been the team that's stolen all the headlines this year.
Yeah.
They've been fantastic to watch. Tyreek Wilson used to be on that Charles team that won the league. He's been unbelievable, scoring late goals, late against Rovers, late last week as well against Derry, or 2 weeks ago against Derry. So fantastic team to watch. And then Bows have been up and down this year.
Mm.
Bows have been Bows this year, really, haven't they?
Yeah.
They started the season really well. But I don't know, there's a small theory of mine is that maybe the Bows were potentially in better shape physically than everyone at the start of the season under Alan Reynolds, and then everyone sort of caught up, and potentially that's part of it. Bows have always struggled over the last, say, 5, 6, 7 years of scoring goals consistently, and look, they're operating below where St. Pat's and Shamrock Rovers are. I think Bows are probably benefiting from Derry's lack of form this year as well.
Not last week.
Well, of course,
the 4-1 loss. They were missing keeper Casper Araska, who had his wedding last week, booked months ago, I'm sure.
Was that a Friday night game?
Probably a couple of years ago.
Friday night game, yeah.
You should know better.
You should know better. But anyway, maybe misjudged the international break, but we're going to benefit of the doubt. But then that Derry team was the last with 4 of their players were let go on Monday, including Josh Thomas, Ben Doherty, Deepak Akinyemi, and Henry Loyola, who was recalled from loan, Charlton Athletic. That Derry team shouldn't be, like, Bowles should be not letting 4 go in against that Derry team, especially the way they've been this year.
James McLean announced a book yesterday.
Right.
Yeah. His memoirs written by Dan McDonnell. So that's going to be an interesting one.
Very interesting. No holds barred, I think.
I can imagine there's going to be some interesting stories.
Oh my God, there's going to be, like, he just has zero filter, which is great for a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to come out with some stuff. He's probably been holding some things in. Hopefully.
I don't know if he's holding too much in.
He doesn't hold much in, but I love James McLean. I think he's great. He's a breath of fresh air. He winds people up naturally, but...
Yeah, a lot of people haven't taken to him since he moved back to the League of Ireland, especially in particular some of the Derry fans.
Well, they're not seeing the best of him, obviously.
His form hasn't been great. He's been out injured, but he's also been outspoken as well. And
yeah, he's been playing out of position as well. That's a big one. I don't know. Like, there's a lot of stars in that Derry team. So I don't know, when you come in the end of your career, you can't really be expecting to be in form, playing exactly where you want to be, especially with the likes of Michael Duffy, Patrick McLean in that team. So I don't know. It's probably his last season. Hopefully he doesn't finish before the end of the season, because I'd love to see him see it out.
Yeah, finish it.
But
On Cristiano Ronaldo, just to return to Cristiano Ronaldo, I had a little
rant
search there.
Yeah.
When do you think he last had a top season? Just like as a general, like, guess.
Was it his last season at Old Trafford on his return? Like, he had a really good goal return that season, even if he...
So he scored 18 goals.
Yeah.
For Man United.
Not bad for his age.
In 2021, 2022.
Has he had a good season since then?
Don't necessarily say... that was like, he did well for what he is.
Yeah.
But when do you think Ronaldo was like last a top player?
Wow.
The 2018 World Cup that season, 17-18, Juventus? Or did he move the year after?
You're a year too early there.
So you're 18, 19.
Yeah, 18, 19. So in 2020, 2021, he scored 29 goals for Juventus, but they finished fourth. So you could say probably not his best work. So you're thinking 2019, 2020, 31 goals, Juventus finished first. That's probably when Ronaldo was last good. That's probably an unfair categorization. That's probably when Ronaldo was last Ronaldo. So you're talking 6 years.
When he was last great, possibly. He's been good since in an odd season or two, but not really recently. He needs a big next couple of games for the Ronaldo. Because it would have hurt him watching Messi score a hat-trick against Algeria. Or hearing about it. I'm sure he wasn't watching. But that ego needs to be massaged and quick. And if it's not, the strop is about to happen, I think.
Like six years is a long time. That's a lifetime in football. That's more than half a decade.
That's what they say. 6 years is a long time in football. Famous phrase.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a bit like scandalous, or it makes you think a little bit deeper about the Ronaldo situation, that we're still considering, that anybody is considering, that he should be in the Portugal side at all just because he was good 6 years ago.
Yeah.
A lot has changed since then.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
So we're talking pre-COVID times. Ross, you mentioned the Irish teams in European action, that we learned the European opposition for much of the Irish teams during the week.
Yeah. So Shamrock Rovers have drawn Floriana of Malta, a former Roddy Collins managed club.
Right, didn't know that.
Yeah.
Pretty good draw on paper.
Yeah, very good draw. And then after that, if they win, they'll face the winner of Arad Armenia versus Riga of Latvia. So Riga, if people remember, brought Vinny Pertz's first Champions League fixture in charge, friend of the show, Vinny Pertz, brought them to nil all the way until extra time, and then Dundalk won on penalties. I think they might have played Rovers a couple of years ago as well. So that's a great draw for them. They can possibly get into the third round of the Champions League. And then if they lose, they'll play FK Kano Žalgiris of Lithuania or Drita of Kosovo. I watched Drita last year play Shells. Yeah.
He's
poor. Now, we're now 7 months removed. They could be a lot better. They obviously won the Kosovan League. So I don't know. That would be a Conference League game. So they don't want that. You don't want to lose the first round. Shells obviously benefited from having Linfield last year. They were able to win that and go into, you know, guarantee that they'll have the two steps to fall down to. But look, if they do end up losing, it will be a good draw for them in the Conference League.
Could be Linfield again for Shells.
For Shells, yeah. Shells got the winner of Linfield and Noam Kalju of Estonia. Both very favourable. Obviously, Shells beat Linfield over two ties last year. And then Noam Kalju, Pats beat in extra time of their second tie away, that was actually last year in the second qualifying round of the Conference League. Obviously went on to play Besiktas after, so it's favourable for Shells. It's not favourable for Derry City. They got CSKA Sofia of Bulgaria in the first qualifying round of the Europa League, and if they win, they'll face the winner of Karabag, who beat Shells off the park last summer, and Vestri of Iceland.
Okay.
It's just not, I just can't see Derry getting past that. Now, they will have the ladder to fall down to the Conference League, and if they do, they'll face Rijeka, who also played Chelsea off the park Oak Park last year. Tony Fruk, who's with Croatia at the World Cup, won't be on that team.
Okay.
Should Croatia get at least the knockouts. So they might have a chance in that situation, but I don't know. And then finally, Bowes will face St. Joseph's of Gibraltar, who Rovers beat last year comfortably, and Shells beat the year before. So they'll have a decent chance of getting into the second round. And if they do, they'll play Connors Keys Nomads of Wales or Balkany of Kosovo. Mm. So all around, decent outlook for the teams.
Yeah, Gibraltar already proving to be a tricky place to get to.
Yeah.
For a lot of Bowes fans.
Yeah, a lot of Bowes fans are finding it hard trying to get to either Valencia or Malaga and then getting down.
Seville, probably not the worst place to fly into.
Sorry, Seville, not Valencia.
You could also probably fly into Portugal and make your way into the country. Yeah. But it's still, it's a tricky place to
go. I know a lot of people had terrible time. I wasn't around in 2024. I was in the States, so I didn't get a chance to go to Gibraltar. But I know a lot of people who went over, and the travel journeys that they had, it was a bit like Matthew's trip to Prague, where he truncated in different places.
But got there eventually.
Got there eventually.
Yeah. A lot of people in the comments of the YouTube, not happy with my best board categorization and judging sides off one game. That's the point. I'm putting myself on the line. We're putting ourselves on the line saying where we think these sides are going to be. And to be honest, I think we've been too generous so far, Shane.
Too generous, right?
But
even though no teams are in the top tier yet.
That's because there's been no top tier sides on the show yet. We do have a Braeburn question to bring you.
Yep.
So the Braeburn question is, who was the first goal scorer at this World Cup? So we've had 26 games now, 26, 27 games now. Can you remember the first goal scorer from this tournament? So if you get that, it's a WhatsApp only question. So WhatsApp us on 0879180180, and you could be in the chance with winning a €100 Braeburn voucher, because Off the Ball breakfast is with Braeburn. Whether the Irish summer is a scorcher or serving up some summer showers, Braeburn coffee has the perfect iced coffee, from refreshing iced mochas to iced lattes. Whatever the weather, Braeburn coffee has you covered. Available exclusively at Applegreen, made for your summer. So text us 0879180180. Who was the first goal scorer at this year's World Cup?
Brilliant stuff. Ross, thanks many for now.
Thank you.